Welcome to Taiwan Security Review. This is your host, Alex Gray, and today we're joined by former U.S. National Security Advisor, Ambassador Robert C. O'Brien. Ambassador O'Brien is additionally the chairman of GTI's Taiwan Task Force, which will be issuing a report in the coming months on all aspects of the U.S.-Taiwan relationship. Ambassador O'Brien, thanks so much for joining us today.
Great to be with you, Alex. Thank you.
So you have been leading GTI's task force on Taiwan. You've got a really impressive group you've assembled to analyze all aspects of the relationship. Why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about both the task force, the objectives, and what you learned from your March trip to Taiwan?
Well, that's a great question, Alex. Thank you. I mean, the reason the task force was set up is because the relationship between the United States of America and Taiwan, the Republic of China, is so critical to the national security of both countries. And Taiwan is a like-minded country that shares our values, that believes in democracy and the rule of law and free enterprise and capitalism and free speech. And so we've seen a deterioration of democratic values around the world, and we've seen authoritarian leaders, whether it's Xi Jinping in China or Vladimir Putin in Russia or the Ayatollahs of Iran, believe that they can take over smaller neighbors just because they have the might on their side. The might makes right. And I don't think we want to live in a world where might makes right. We want to live in a world where we share values with countries big and small. And so the Global Taiwan Institute set up a task force. They asked me to chair it. I was honored to do so. We set it up in a bipartisan fashion and have a bunch of great members, former military officers, former diplomats, people who are Democrats, Republicans, people that worked for the former Speaker of the House on the Democrat side, people who worked in the Trump administration. And our goal is to put together a report that will help strengthen the relationship between the United States and Taiwan with specific concrete recommendations. And that report's coming along. I think it'll be issued probably in October or November of this year. And I think it's going to be another step in the right direction of strengthening the ties between our countries.
Well, I think we're all excited to see the report, and particularly given some of the events that have happened recently. Vice President William Lai has transited the United States. It's prompted the usual round of Chinese saber rattling. There's an election coming up in Taiwan in January. What's your big picture sense of where the kind of strategic picture is right now with Taiwan and China and U.S.-Taiwanese relations?
Well, I think the transit issue is something that we just need to, that's a normal issue that takes place all the time. Taiwanese leaders have been transiting since 1972. They transited to the United States. We're a global hub. It shouldn't be controversial that leaders of Democratic Taiwan visit the United States. Tsai Ing-wen, the president of Taiwan, has been here. She recently met with Speaker McCarthy at the Reagan Library, which is highly symbolic. You know, William Lai has been here. I had a chance to meet with Vice President Lai in Taiwan during our visit in March. Terrific guy. I'm glad he was able to come here and meet not just American leaders, but other world leaders in New York. So, but I think we shouldn't play into the Chinese game of making every transit by some Taiwanese leader an issue. It's a routine matter. It's never been an issue before, and it shouldn't be an issue any further. I think what we do need to be careful about is, you know, what's the relationship between China and Taiwan right now? And China has been increasing the bellicose. They've been trying to narrow what the time frame for a potential course of reunification, whether that takes place because of an amphibious invasion or a blockade or some other form of coercion, where there's not one country, two systems, but there's one country, one system, with the Chinese Communist Party dominating Taiwan. And the people there believe in democracy. They don't want that to happen. They've never been under the thumb of the Communist Party of China. The Communist Party of China has never governed Taiwan, and it never should in the future, unless the people of Taiwan freely choose to do so, which I don't think will ever happen, because democracy has taken root there in a way that it is an inspiration to countries all over the world. So I think we need to support Taiwan. We need to deter China, and we need to make sure that our friends and partners in Taiwan continue to live a free and open life with all the choices that come with being a democracy and a country that believes in the rule of law.
You talked about normalizing the fact that senior Taiwanese leaders can transit the United States. This is something that's happened for decades. There's no reason rationally for the Chinese to threaten kinetic action over something that routine. Another issue that really should be routine is the fact that Taiwan has diplomatic relations with countries around the world. Vice President Lai was actually en route to Paraguay for the presidential inauguration there when he transited, another country with diplomatic relations with Taiwan. China is, going back to before your time at the NSC, China has been systematically attacking Taiwan's diplomatic allies, trying to flip them in recognition. That campaign continues, it's growing. How do you see that? What do you think the priority should be for the United States to try and resist that? How do we go about trying to allow some diplomatic space for Taiwan and in the world?
Well, it's not just with the countries, Alex, as you well know. It's international organizations like the WHO and international aviation bodies and the UN. Taiwan should have access to those organizations. They're one of the biggest economies in the world, one of the top 20 economies in the world. They're a democratic country. They have kind of a monopoly on the market for high-tech nano chips, silicon chips. You know, this is a major important country that needs to play a role in the world. And I think what we're seeing with the effort to slice off the diplomatic relations that Taiwan maintains with other countries is an effort to further isolate Taiwan by the Communist Party of China and to limit the space in which Taiwan can operate internationally. And I think they've seen the Ukraine conflict, and they've seen countries with diplomatic relations with Ukraine rally to Ukraine's assistance, even though there was no treaty obligation to do so. And I think this is all part and parcel of an effort by China to prepare the battlefield for an eventual course of action against Taiwan. And if they can, you know, reduce the number of countries that diplomatically recognize Taipei as the Republic of China, that'll make their job easier in their view to conquer Taiwan. And so I think the United States has a role to play and should make an effort to help Taiwan maintain its diplomatic relations and not only maintain the relationships it has, but see if we can't flip back some of these countries that recognize China because of a bribery or false promises and corruption, and you know, give Taiwan some more breathing space. But that also includes international organizations. I mean, Taiwan did a great job responding to the COVID pandemic. They actually helped us. And as you recall, Alex, at the NSC, when the White House itself was short on masks, it was the Republic of China, it was Taiwan that delivered masks to the White House to help us keep our employees safe on the watch floor of the Situation Room and in the National Security Council and in the residence of the White House for the First Family. So Taiwan played a great important role in responding to the pandemic, and they showed a lot of leadership. The lessons that Taiwan had to teach the world of the pandemic was in part denied because the Chinese prevented them from presenting at the WHO, the World Health Organization. So those are other areas beyond the bilateral relationships where we need to help Taiwan have a voice in the world. And that's not contrary to U.S. policy of a one-China policy or a recognition of Beijing, but it creates space for democratic people to have interactions with others in the international arena.
Ambassador, you've been outspoken on the Ukraine issue. You've been in government. You were one of the key folks involved in making sure that Ukraine had everything it needed to deter Russian aggression. There's a debate going on right now about what are the lessons from Ukraine that can be applied to Taiwan. Based on your visit in March and your understanding of the issue, how do you see those lessons applying, and what should both the United States and Taiwan be taking from the Ukraine crisis?
Well, the first lesson Xi Jinping should understand is that invading a neighbor is much harder than it seems on paper. So when your generals come and tell you we can overrun a country in no time at all, and we're going to take our dress uniforms for the parade through Kyiv, you know, with us in our tank, he should be very skeptical. An industrialized country is difficult to overwhelm and to conquer. And I think Ukraine, in some ways, is easier for the Russians because they have a land border with Ukraine. I think Taiwan would be much more difficult for the CCP to conquer than Ukraine was for the Russians. And the Russians didn't have much success in Ukraine so far. And I think Xi Jinping should learn a lesson from that. I think on our side, free world side, we need to understand that the dictators need to be deterred, not appeased. And so much was done in Europe on the diplomatic front to try and not provoke Putin, to show that the West meant Putin no harm. Putin knows that. Putin was out to conquer his neighbor. This was not about NATO. It wasn't about Russia being surrounded. Look, China understands that Taiwan is not a threat to China, and the West is not a threat to China. And so we need to deter. We shouldn't worry about provoking China and provoking Beijing and the Communist Party. We should worry about deterring them from taking steps like Putin did with Ukraine. And the way to do it, Alex, you and I wrote an article about this about a year ago. We need to get Taiwan, the ROC, the weapons it needs to deter Beijing. Anti-ship missiles, it's quick-strike sea mines, that's Javelin missiles and Stinger anti-aircraft missiles. We need to get them the asymmetric weapons it needs to show China and the Communist Party that the invasion would be very difficult to undertake because Taiwan's turned itself into a porcupine. But we also need to get them the more conventional weapons, the F-16s that they've bought and paid for and that need to get finished and delivered, and some of the other bigger platforms as well. So we need to make sure that Taiwan is sufficiently armed to deter China from taking aggressive action or from seeking to coerce Taiwan into a reunification that the people don't want. And so that's what we can do. And then we need to be very strong on the diplomatic front. We need to have a clear message to Beijing that, if you want Taiwan and you're going to invade Taiwan, there will be a full decoupling with the United States and the West. That you won't do business with us in the future. All ties will be cut. It'll be over. And they need to understand the downside risk to their economy and to their way of life if they decide to invade Taiwan. They need to understand that's a major red line for the United States. And they also have to be put at risk that the U.S. very well could side with Taiwan in an invasion scenario at great cost to the Chinese military.
Let's talk about the defense side of the U.S.-Taiwan relationship a little bit more and what Taiwan needs defensively. You alluded to some things. You mentioned the Wall Street Journal article you and I wrote a couple months back. There's this, I would say it's kind of a false choice, but there's the argument in the Washington policy community that you alluded to on whether Taiwan can be a porcupine or should it have more traditional conventional weapons. It sounds like you're advocating for kind of a split the baby approach. Can you unpack that a little bit more for our listeners on how you would, based on your time in government and now, how you think about providing for Taiwan's defense?
Yeah, that's an excellent question, Alex. Thank you. Look, what you and I talked about was the porcupine theory, and that is the deterrence of China, of the Communist Party, from invading Taiwan. And how do you deter them? The best way to deter them is through missiles and the ability to hit their forces as they assemble to cross the strait, to hit their forces in the strait, and then to hit their forces on the beaches with overwhelming firepower naval strike missiles, cruise missiles, sea strike mines. Those are all things that would make a cross-strait invasion very difficult. But there are other things that Taiwan's facing with the Chinese aggression as well, and that's protecting their air defense identification zone, protecting the median line in the strait between China and Taiwan. And for that sort of defense, that's a little different. That does require advanced fighter aircraft. And what the Chinese are doing is they're throwing so much stuff in these quote exercises at the Taiwanese that they're trying to literally wear out their equipment and wear out their pilots because they have so many sorties approaching Taiwan every day. And it's requiring the Taiwanese to put sortie up their aircraft to defend their airspace and to protect their sovereignty and their ability to maintain their way of life. And so we need to make sure that they have the weapons that they need, the platforms they need to protect their way of life day to day. And that means F-16s. That probably means some submarines. There's an indigenous program in Taiwan to build more submarines, and we need to help them speed that up. And then the other thing is that the Taiwanese need to show the world, like the Ukrainians have and like the Poles and the Balts have, that they're willing to stand up and defend themselves. And so we need, hunting clubs, like the way we have hunting and shooting clubs in Eastern Europe, where civilians are being trained on how to use weapons and how to defend themselves. We need Taiwan to start building up a full supply of AK-47s and smaller weapons, small arms, that the people, their population can be issued in the event of a serious threat by China or an actual invasion, so that the people of Taiwan themselves can show the world and show the Chinese that they're willing to fight for their freedom. And look, gun control is popular and the gun culture is probably not popular in Taiwan, but it needs to be, because if the Chinese invade, handing out weapons to people without training, without the skills to use them at the last minute isn't going to be effective. What would be effective in both deterring China, but also in defeating China in the event of an invasion, would be for the conscription to be expanded and for the civilian population of Taiwan to learn how to use firearms to defend themselves and their neighborhoods and have a sufficient stock of those firearms available before an invasion to arm the people of Taiwan.
You mentioned possibility of an invasion. Obviously, this is something on everyone's mind in Taiwan and in the policy circles in Washington. Admiral Davidson, who you worked with closely, has his famous window 2027 as the likely date for an invasion. You've said publicly you think that that window may be moving closer, maybe sooner than Admiral Davidson's original date. What makes you think that, and how are you looking at that situation now?
Well, I think the Davidson window is closing, and I think it could be as short as 2 years now. And I think the reason is the communist Chinese are misjudging America. They believe America is fundamentally weak. They watched the withdrawal from Afghanistan, which was catastrophic and you know, ill thought out, and ill executed, and they viewed that as a sign of weakness. And obviously the Russians did as well, and that's why they invaded Ukraine. They looked at America's failure to deter Russia from invading Ukraine. They watched us, you know, send Western diplomats to Putin to kowtow to Putin to beg him not to invade Ukraine. And he only saw that as a sign of weakness, and he invaded anyway. So I think the Chinese are viewing America and the West as weak right now. And I think that's tied to the current administration. And it's focused on diplomacy and not hard power. And they got away with flying a spy balloon over America that wasn't shot down until it transited the whole country, transmitted data back to China, and then was shot down only after it left America. So there are a number of things that I think cause them to believe that America is weak. The Chinese should understand is America is not weak. We appear weak. And you know, the policies of the current administration certainly aren't those of a peace or strength administration like you would have had under Reagan or Trump or even Bush. But this administration looks much more like Jimmy Carter at this point in the Carter years. And that, so America appears weak, but it's not fundamentally. The fundamentals of America haven't changed. America remains strong. And we'll remain at this tough, close partner of Taiwan. And I think Biden is trying to fix it with Taiwan. He said several times, even though his staff has walked it back, that the U.S. would defend Taiwan in the event of a cross-strait invasion. So I think, number one, there's a view that America's weak, and there's a window of weakness before a new administration comes into place in 2025 that the Chinese want to potentially take advantage of. But I think the second issue is, I think China is fundamentally weak. I think the economy is having serious problems. They've got demographic problems with their one-child policy. Their population is declining. Their economy is declining. They have massive debt. And I think that I'm afraid that Xi Jinping may try and create a crisis with Taiwan to remove the attention of the Chinese people on the economy and the poor performance of his administration. And whip up nationalism, very similar to how General Galtieri in Argentina used the Falklands to try and distract the Argentinian people from the poor economic performance of the junta. I could see the Chinese communists doing the same thing here. So a combination of the Chinese seeing America and seeing Washington as weak and the Biden administration as being weak, again, I think that's a misperception, and their own internal problems on the economic front could create an unfortunate situation where Xi Jinping believes that an invasion or a course of action against Taiwan is in his interest in the short term.
Ambassador, you mentioned strategic ambiguity and this longstanding question of whether the United States would intervene in a potential Chinese invasion of Taiwan. President Biden has repeatedly, as you mentioned, explicitly said that the United States would. His staff has walked it back. It's a little bit of a muddle right now. This gets to the question of U.S. hard power capabilities to deter and potentially intervene kinetically to prevent a successful Chinese invasion. Center for Strategic and International Studies, CSIS, did a series of war games that showed the United States would ultimately prevail but lose almost its entire global tactical aviation capacity. Other war games have shown similar rates of attrition. How do you look at the U.S. hard power situation, and what does the next administration need to do to make sure that we have the capability to deter and, if necessary, win in a cross-strait crisis?
I think there's a lot of focus in the press and among diplomats about these ideas of strategic ambiguity, what Biden said, what his staff said, what the U.S. is saying. I think the Chinese don't pay as much attention to that as to how many carriers that we have that are fully maintained and that are deployable, how many submarines we have that are out in the Pacific as opposed to tied up alongside waiting for maintenance, how many missiles we have to keep in the magazines of our DDGs, our guided missile cruisers, our Ticonderoga-class cruisers. So the Chinese are keeping very careful tally of American firepower. And when American firepower diminishes, whatever security guarantees are there for Taiwan or whatever ambiguity we try to insert into the situation is either has credibility or it doesn't. So the most credible way for us to protect Taiwan, but not just Taiwan, protect our other allies and partners in the region, but around the world, is to have a strong America. I mean, this goes back to Ronald Reagan, peace or strength. A strong America deters aggression, and we don't have wars, and a weak America, or an America that's perceived as being weak, is provocative, and conflicts take place, and we've seen that play out in real time. So we need to rebuild our military, we need to rebuild our defense industrial base, we need to build more shipyards immediately to service the ships that are built. We've got to stop retiring prematurely ships, whether they're LCS or cruisers. I mean, the premature retiring of our ships is you know, a real national tragedy. We need to, instead of retiring ships early, we need to do ship life extensions on all the ships in our Navy and get to a 385-ship Navy, build enough tactical aircraft so that even China understands that a full-blown conflict, we not, you know, whatever attrition we face, we'll always be able to replace our aircraft and rebuild the military in the way that Ronald Reagan did in the 1980s. That's what the Communist Party of China will watch and be concerned about.
Ambassador, as we close in on the end of our time here, I wanted to ask you one economic question. As we're looking at in your task force, there, the mandate is not just military, it's not just diplomacy, it's also to look at the economic relationship, to look at the whole spectrum of ties between the U.S. and Taiwan. A U.S.-Taiwan free trade agreement is something that's been talked about for a very long time. President Tsai made a tremendous domestic political, very courageous in my view, effort to change her country's policies to put them in a position to be able to have an FTA with the United States. We have not been able to get that done on the American side. What do you see the prospects for a potential U.S.-Taiwan FTA as being in the near future?
I think an FTA is a very important step for the U.S. and Taiwan. I think it would make up for some of the diplomatic isolation that Taiwan is facing with some of the countries that have switched their relationships from Taipei to Beijing. So I think it would be a shot in the arm for the Taiwanese people. I think it'd be good for the economies of both countries. I mean, we need to make sure it's a fair FTA so that American workers are, don't lose their jobs. But I think one of the things that we're seeing with the TSMC building a major plant, a fabrication plant in Arizona, the plans are well underway. I think the American people can see, you know, the relationship economically with Taiwan benefits us as much as it does Taiwan. So I think the more interaction we can have on the economic front between the two countries, the better. I think FTAs are notoriously hard to negotiate, but there's no reason we can't get one done with Taiwan. And look, we ought to be looking at doing FTAs with other countries in the region as well. We have one with Australia. We need one with New Zealand. And one of the ways to defeat China and make sure that they're not aggressive towards our neighbors is to have great economic integration between the free world countries in the region. So an FTA with Taiwan is good. FTA with New Zealand would be great. And we have to look at whether other countries could benefit from that sort of arrangement as well.
Well, Ambassador O'Brien, thank you so much for joining us today on Taiwan Security Review for the Global Taiwan Institute. And we are all looking forward to seeing the results of the task force.
Yeah, Alex, thank you for your great work at the National Security Council and at the White House. And you did as much as anyone in government to promote the relationship between the United States and the Republic of China and Taiwan. And so it's an honor to be with you. And thank you for all of your work on the relationship over the past several years.
Thanks so much, Ambassador.